from the very first page. The outstanding story and the depth of the characters are what kept me coming back to this book over and over again. When I saw Notre Dame Cathedral at last, I felt like I could see Quasimodo climbing the walls in his race to protect Esmeralda. Little did I know that everyone loved this book. When it was first published in 1831, it was an instant success. Readers loved it, and, shocking, even the critics loved it. Just 4 years after the original publication, Louise Bertin premiered the first opera based on The Hunchback. She called it La Esmeralda. Within a couple of decades of publication, the story of The Hunchback and Esmeralda had been retold dozens of times in operas, plays, and ballets. The public ate it all up. It became an instant classic. Why such popularity? For one thing, historical novels were all the rage. French readers were particularly fond of novels set in the Middle Ages, and this one is set in the late Middle Ages. Victor Hugo was already a best-selling author who had received a large advance for this novel. When he didn't deliver the manuscript on time, his publishers sued him to make him hurry up. As a matter of fact, the first edition of the book is missing three chapters that Victor Hugo wrote in time for the second printing. But Victor Hugo took a big gamble when he set his novel at the heart of a decrepit Gothic cathedral. Decrepit, you ask? Yes. When Victor Hugo started writing The Hunchback, Notre Dame Cathedral was falling apart. Most of the statues on the outside were broken or had been stolen. Maybe you can see the stately row of kings above the doors of Notre Dame? In a fit of rage, groups of revolutionaries climbed up the facade and took hammers to all the heads. They thought that these were the heads of the kings of France and took them off. I see why everyone thinks they are the kings of France. They each hold a scepter, have a crown, and look down on all of us. But historians say these are the statues of the kings of Judah, the lineage of the Virgin Mary, not the kings of France. Details. The revolutionaries didn't know, and neither did Victor Hugo, because he too says that they were the heads of the kings of France. At any rate, the revolutionaries pushed the massive heads of the statues to the ground about 25 yards below. The broken heads were taken away by a man called Lacanal, who hid them in his basement. They've since been found, and you can see some of them at the Cluny Museum in Paris. But Victor Hugo had an unconventional interest in Gothic architecture. By 1831, most French people thought there were just too many churches, and they were quite happy to let a lot of them rot. But Victor Hugo, who probably went by the cathedral a few times a day because he lived nearby, loved the heft and the grace of the building. You'll hear how eloquently he speaks of the architecture of Notre Dame in chapter 3 of The Hunchback. And, strangely, for a novel staged inside of a cathedral, The Hunchback doesn't center on religious themes. For example, Archdeacon Frollo is a tortured soul because his lust for Esmeralda clashes with his religious commitment. The ladies who handle the orphans say some shocking things coming from people who spend a lot of time in the church. But these things happen as a given in the novel, and the story moves on. God is not at the helm in this novel. Tortured human beings drive the plot. So why did Victor Hugo choose to set his novel at Notre Dame Cathedral? Many scholars say he intended to draw attention to the fate of the building. Others say this church just got lucky. Whatever it was, there is no question that there was renewed interest in Notre Dame Cathedral after the publication of the novel. Victor Hugo experienced a lot of strikes of genius when writing this masterpiece, and one of them is definitely what he says about the state of the cathedral. Let me quote from the novel. "The Church of Notre Dame de Paris is still no doubt a majestic and sublime edifice. But beautiful as it has been preserved in growing old, it is difficult not to sigh, not to wax."